today the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. Parshas Chukas, we lay in this aliyah, I mean the whole aliyah, this, we lay in Monday and Thursday and Shabbos, but we also lay in it for Parshas Parah, okay, the second, the third of the Dalet Parshas, Parshah Parah Aduma Tamima Asher Ein Bamum. Okay, there are some very Farah, Aduma, Tamima, correct? Let's discuss some interesting things about Parah Aduma. Number one, how many Parah Adumos were there since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu? Not so simple. So in Masechta Parah, there's a Masechta called Masechta Parah.
Yeah.
Okay, now it lists over there the assumption, according to most of the commentators, there are 10. Does it actually say there are nine. There's a tradition that the total number of parois from beginning of time till the end of time will be exactly 10. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one to bring a paradum in his time, and it was very bizarre, is the second one was Ezra HaSoifer. Now that basically means that the paradum of Moshe Rabbeinu lasted approximately 1,000 years. From the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until the time of the last Navi, we learned this last week, Malachi, the death of Malachi was 40 years into the Bayis Sheni, the second Beis HaMikdash, was exactly 1,000 years. Very easy calculation. Look at the calculation is, the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni lasted together 420 years. That's 800. Let's go to the calculation. I'm not good. Four Bayis Rishon is 410. The Bayis Sheni was 420. You're right. I'm getting confused. You're right. I'm sorry. You're right. Got me. Let's start. How long was it from the time they left Egypt until they built the Bayis, the inauguration of the Bayis Rishon? The Pasuk in Sefer Melachim, 480 years. It says, when Shlomo HaMelech inaugurated the Bayis Rishon, it was 480 years from Yitzias Mitzrayim. So how many years is that? And how long did the Bayis Rishon last? It lasted 410 years. No, 410. The Bayis Rishon lasted 410 years.
Yeah, that's right. 890 years.
Now, how many years? 890 years. Then we have 70 years of 70 years of Golus. That takes us to 960. And then we have 40 years until the death of the building of the Bayis Sheni, until the death of Malachi. It's exactly 1,000 years. Are we clear with this? Let's try one more time. 480 years from the time of Yitzias Mitzrayim until the building of the Bayis Rishon. 410 years for the Bayis Rishon. 70 years of Golos. And that takes us to 960 years. Now they begin building the Bayis Sheni. 40 years into the Bayis Sheni, Malachi dies, and Shimon HaTzadik, on that Tekufa, he meets with Alexander the Great. He meets with Alexander the Great, and he's able to convince him, to persuade him not to destroy Yerushalayim, not to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and succeeds. And in his honor, it wasn't really in his honor, that's a misnomer, it's not a mistake. He demanded, people say, you read the books, they'll tell you that in his honor, the Jews voluntarily named their children Alexander. This very chashuv sefer from Toledano said that's not true. He demanded something in exchange. He demanded that they name everyone name their children by his name. There was something else he demanded, and basically that was his way of destroying Klal Yisrael. Because by Purim being called Alexander, why are we called Alexander? We're named after Alexander the Great. Well, who was Alexander the Great? Oh, he was a cultured person. He was a very interesting. Let's follow in his ways. So he did not physically destroy the Yerushalayim and the Beis Hamikdash. In exchange, he demanded something very subtle, which opened up an opening in the Jew, amongst the Jew Klal Yisrael, to become to a degree assimilated.
What's about the day to change?
Oh, right, the calendar, right? The way they calculate time, right? So he was a genius. You gotta admit that Alexander the Great was a genius. He wanted to destroy Yerushalayim, and Shimon HaTzadik stopped him from physically destroying the bricks and stones of Yerushalayim, but he outsmarted Shimon HaTzadik in this respect. Okay, I won't destroy you today, but I'll destroy you over time. I demand that everyone here name their next child Alexander, and I demand that the way you're going to calculate time going forward is from today. Is from right now, today, the day when Alexander the Great has allowed you to live. I could have destroyed you, and I decide to let you remain alive. It's called Dominion Hashtaros. Dominion Hashtaros. We try to whitewash it. We don't want to mention this horrible event. Dominion Hashtaros is the day when Alexander the Great decided to let the Jews live. And everyone would now have to be forced in time and by name to reflect upon the empire of Alexander the Great, and which then turned into Yavan, the Hellenists, the Syrian Greeks, which reached its climax with the Hanukkah story about 200 years later, and came that close to destroying Klal Yisrael from within. So he was a genius. He was a genius. He really was a genius. He tried to destroy Klal Yisrael from within by having them assimilate and becoming Syrian Greeks. And he almost won. Hanukkah was his defeat. That was really his defeat. It started with Shimon HaTzadik and ended 200 years later with the Chashmonaim, who finally put that horrible period to an end. All right, in any event, it comes out then that when did Ezra live? Ezra lived approximately the same time as Malachi, the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. Ezra was the second person on record to make a Parah Aduma. So that means that the Parah Aduma of Moshe Rabbeinu lasted for approximately 1,000 years. It's a Mishnah, Masech Parah. It's a Mishnah. V'zelosh na Mishnah. Umi asa'am harishayna asa Moshe v'yashni asa Ezra. Now the question is, how in the world can a Parah Aduma, the ash of one Parah, last for 1,000 years? So some want to say very simply, Maisa Nisim. Like the Hanukkah menorah, the Nair, you put enough oil to last, for 12 hours, and it lasted for 24 hours. Okay, went the entire day until they relit the candles at night. It's not possible there should be enough ash in one Parah, even if you take a Mashahu, to last for 1,000 years, to be Metaher, every single member of Klal Yisrael, every time they became Tamei Meis, which happens all the time. So it had to be nothing more than Maisa Nisim. And the question then is, well, can you rely upon Maisa Nisim for Halacha? If you create an animal, the Sefer Yetzirah, can you make a bracha, Asher Kiddushana B'mitzvayse V'tzivanu Al Hashchita? When you create something out of a miracle, if I go and I do a Maisa Nisim and I make tzitzis, I do some type of nes and I create tzitzis, am I yoytze the mitzvah of tzitzis through tzitzis that came about through a miracle? Not necessarily. You cannot be mekayim a mitzvah through Maisa Nisim. So this is a very challenging topic of discussion. How in the world can a Parah Aduma last for 1,000 years? And if you're going to tell me, like some do, that it came through Maisa Nisim as a miracle, then the people who made use of that Parah Aduma were not tar, because halacha is very strict. Halacha is in this world; it has to follow the rules of science, physics, and it does not allow itself to.
Well, the ashes
Well, we're only up to the first Beis HaMikdash now. In the 7 years of Golus, you mean? Yes. So they took it with them. That's not a kasha. They took it with them. They took the ashes with them to Bavel. What?
It was three separate piles.
Right, they made different piles later on. The piles came later on. During the Bayis Rishon, it's not so clear they had three piles yet. That was a later innovation, the Bayis Sheni. All right, so this is something which is a very big time. Some want to say very simply is that these are interesting ideas. They're in techniques. First of all, a para, when they burn the para, the ash you use for the para does not necessarily have to be the para itself. If you make a pyre and you burn enormous amount of wood and you put in the middle of the para and you burn the para on all of this massive, massive pyre of wood, every particle of ash from the pyre has the halachic status of paraduma. It's not just the para itself. The para can be very big as well. What? The wood also has the status of the aether part. So therefore it could very well be that Moshe Rabbeinu, he made an enormous, enormous bonfire and produced an enormous amount of ash. And the amount of ash you need to be metayer yourself is a teeny mashu. Now what do? You take a massive barrel, a massive tank of water, massive, take a tank, who knows, you just go to the sewer water, go to the reservoir. And you put in a teeny particle of the ash of the paraduma, and you drop it in. The entire tank has the status of paraduma water. We think, oh, it has to look black, has to have a sheer that's nearly nayan. It's black and it's thick. It's like mud, and they sprinkle, and you tell the koyein. More. I want a full shear of the paraduma. Make sure I'm covered in mud, like go for a mud bath. And you come out of the paraduma, it's like you went for a mud bath. No. It's not the way it goes. One person will then use up all the paraduma water in one shot. That's not the way it goes. The paraduma, they take a teeny, teeny mashu of ash, and that ash does not necessarily came from the para. It can come from the wood, the pyre that was used to burn the para, and they take that little particle and they put it into a massive barrel, and they take a teeny amount of that, they dip the ezer, the shnitola, they dip it into, and they sprinkle upon you. So in a chanami, it's not shloach k'derech hateva for the paraduma water to last for 1,000 years. It's very, very possible. It's not so far-fetched. The next one was Ezra. Now, from then and on, it lists all the people who did it. We don't know who these people are. It says from Ezra and onward, according to the first interpretation, there were 5, which means there was a grand total of how many? 6. The Chacham say there was 7 from Ezra and onward, which means there was a grand total of 8. We have a tradition that there was really 9. So it's a different interpretations. Who made them? It doesn't really tell us who made them. We have different names. It says Shimon HaTzadik, which was not much later than Ezra. And then it says Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Okay, that was 200 years later, less, 150 years later, maybe even 100 years later. And each one of those, Shimon HaTzadik and Yochanan Kohen, each one made two. And then there was a very mysterious person called El Yehoi Enai Ben Akoif. This person, El Yehoi Enai, the son of a monkey. What in the world does that mean? I have no idea. V'chanam el ha-mitzri. What does that mean? V'yishmol ben Pinai. They made the other one. So these are people that many people have tried very, very hard to historically trace who these great people were who made the other paradumais, which basically, when they make the calculation, basically every 52 years, there was another, on average, there was another para aduma until the end of the Bayis Sheni. Now the truth is, it's Tosfos records, the Balei Tosfos record, that the Amoraim who lived how many years after the Churban? They lived the Amoraim. We discussed the end of the Goyim. Their tkufa came to the end in the year 1038. So you go back, their tkufa was about 300 years, 350 to 400 years. It takes you like right to the 9th century, the 8th century, something like that. And then there was the Rabbanim Savaroi, which is only about 100 years, a very short period of time, the Rabbanim Savaroi. So the Amoraim ended somewhere like the 7th, 8th century. they still had para ether, para aduma. The Baal, they took with them after the Churban Bayesheni. So that's about 700-800 years after, between 700 and 800 years after the Churban Bayesheni, the people living in Bavel still had in their possession, in Bavel, they had the ash of Parah Aduma.
Was he able to use it?
Yes, why not?
You don't need
Tosfos. Tosfos mentions this. Harosh, even later than the Tosfos. Harosh Zal. Okay, the Rosh. B'mesech techulin, perik ches simin dal, kosav davar, what's the next word? Davar nifla. A wondrous thing. V'zel ha-shaynai. B'mei ho-amarayim, ha-yu oichlim truma to-hoi. How can you truma? T'kena koyein today truma? No, why not? He's tamei meis. So what's the problem? We have some, you want some paraduma, Hesh? I have some paraduma. You go to a mikvah, day one, we'll sprinkle upon you some para aduma. We can do it. We do the technique. The person has to, he'll be tar. We'll make him tar. You'll figure out a solution. Mayor, don't worry. We'll figure out the technicalities. We'll figure out. Let's first have a para aduma ash, and then we'll figure out the technical issues. How you oichlin truma to hire Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, not in Bavel. Okay, why not in Bavel? Maybe Bavel is all this old Tommy Mace because of the Goyim. All right, that's not so poshut. It's not so simple. Ki hayelohem efer para kidamrinon chavraya midachan b'galila. Our friends that are tohar in the Galil, so they still had the ash of para aduma. They were able to achieve tahara, a very high level of purity with this ash. That's already how many years? 700-800 years after the Churban. That's Taka Davar Nifla. Okay, they say today, there's a legend that it's still there. We don't know where it is. Somewhere in Eretz Yisrael, it's put away in safekeeping. No one knows where this is. No one knows where it is, but there's a legend. Now let's discuss a very interesting concept. The Gemara, everyone knows the story of the Dama Ben Nissina. Dam ben Nissina was born to him. Now, in order for an para to be eligible for para aduma, it has to be completely red. There can may not have even two red hairs, two brown hairs. One brown hair is okay, or one white hair, whatever it is. But if it has two hairs on its entire body that are not perfectly red, then the animal is disqualified. And of course, you're not allowed to work with it. Anyone ever did any work with the para, it is disqualified. So it's a very rare find to have a para aduma. And the Gemara says of a story where Dan ben Asina had in his possession a para aduma, and Chazal purchased it from him from an enormous amount of money. Now let's take a step back. How did this come about? It came about as a reward. First, they wanted to purchase the Yoshfei stone. The Choshen needs 12 stones. The shoulder stones. The what's it called on the shoulders? The Avnei Shoyam. The Avnei Shoyam, which go on the shoulders of the Kohen, was etched into the shoulder stones. The 12 names of the Shvatim. Has to be from a stone called Yoshfei. It is interesting that there's a machloikis in the Mesorah. Is it Yoshfei or Yoshfei? Okay, it's something if you want to have a fight in Shul with the Baal Kriya. Whatever he says, you can scream out the opposite. If he lays Yoshfei, you scream out Yoshfei. And if he says Yoshfei, you scream out Yoshfei. No, Zeich and Zeich, we know what to do. You have to do both. We know that. No. That we know about. That we lane twice, that we already know. But this we only lane once. No one ever said to lane the Pasuk twice. No one ever said. You lane it once. But whatever he does, it's wrong. Whatever he does, because if he says Yoshveh, you'll scream at him. It's not Yoshveh, my chum, it says Yoshveh. If it says Yoshveh, he says Yoshveh. Kemachloikis. Interesting, the dafka, that word. That is what they needed from the goy. Interesting. Machloikis comes from goyim. Okay, it's that's a hashkocha pratis. Machloikis comes from goyim. We don't even know what the Messiah is. And that they needed from the goy. He was the only one that had in his possession this precious stone. They went to him, Dumbin Asina, and he had it. They were willing to pay an enormous amount of money. Dumbin Asina said, "My father, the keys to the vault is under my father's pillow. He is sleeping. I'm not going to wake him up." Now, I don't know about you and me, but if it was, but most people, and we'll pay you an enormous amount of money. Most people, if they would now wake up their father would find out they lost out to win the jackpot because the son didn't want to wake them up. The son will kill the child. They'll say, "For Narishkeit, you wake me up. For this, you don't wake me up. You wake me up to tell me who won the baseball game. The Yankees won or the Yankees lost. For that, you're willing to wake me up. But for $1 billion, to lose $1 billion, Dad, you don't wake me up. It's shaita, right?" So the whole story is very bizarre. Why Taka the father? They didn't wake up the father to acquire $1 billion, but he didn't. So what happened? The whole story is bizarre. So where then did they get the yashrei from? They went to someone else. There was someone else in town that had it. It's not so clear. It was such an emergency. They needed the yashrei stone so quickly. The whole story is there's a lot of questions about the story. Any event, he passed up an opportunity in honor of Kibud Avoim. What happened a year later? Now the question, did it happen a year later? Did it happen immediately? It's not so clear what the gears is. It was born to him a Parah Aduma, and Chazal paid for him that same amount of money. Now, this is not the only story. He has over here in the Eitzah Pulois other stories on record from other by Maria Chazal where the Parah Aduma, for some bizarre reason, always seems to be coming from Goyim. Question. Why can't we on our own produce a Parah Aduma? Why is Klal Yisrael so incapable of having their own farms? We have many people in Klal Yisrael back in the day own livestock, and they own cows. Why is the story, the famous story of the Parah Aduma, it had to be acquired by a gopher from a goy? And the other stories, not the only story, other stories. Why? Why a goy? Why can we be self-sufficient and produce our own Parah Aduma? It doesn't seem like we had a problem producing all the other materials that were needed to build the Beis HaMikdash. And we did have to enlist the help of a tsar, Tzidon and tsar, but it's not so simple. That either the people who did the construction, it could be he was really Jewish, the whole discussion. But Parah Aduma clearly comes from a goy. The answer is it's a very simple question. It's a very simple answer, but it's just kedai to appreciate the answer. Chazal say the Parah Aduma is a kapara for the chei to egel. Yavoi imoi, let the mother come and clean up her mess. Klal Yisrael, they worshipped a calf. The Egel HaZahav. So what is the Kapara, the atonement? Well, there are many forms of atonement. Moshe Rabbeinu, we were forgiven after all, right? Hashem forgave us. Yet, Yom Pokti Pokadati, in every generation, there's still a little punishment. But one of the elements of atonement, there are many different things which come together, is the Parah Aduma. Whenever man becomes contaminated, he's Tamei Meis, he has to have sprinkled upon himself in the ash of a Parah Aduma. A Parah is the mother, the symbolic mother of the eagle that we worshipped. We burn her flesh, her bones, her sinews. We produce ash, and this ash is mixed with Mayim Chayim, and it's sprinkled upon a person who's Tamei Meis, and he becomes Tar. So every time a person goes through this experience, he is reminded, he is forced to reflect upon the story of the Egel HaZahav, and it's going to be a reminder, it's going to be a kapar. He did this mitzvah is a reminder. Now, the instance, now it's very, very simple. Everything really is very simple. What did we do wrong when we worshipped idols? An idol is something that the Goyim, the Ubayis HaOlam, worship. Hashem, it says in the Pasuk, Hashem has separated us. He's taken us out of Egypt. He's told us to take the idol of Egypt, the Seh, the sheep, the idol, to slaughter it. Nishchu ukuchu lechem tzoyin v'shochatu ha-posach. Hashem has separated us from the Umos HaOlam and told us not to worship the sun, the moon, the stars, the constellations, not to worship animals. It's the first of the Dibros. Anochi Hashem Elokecha lo yelech Elohim acherim al panai. And Parshas Ekev, the Pasuk Pesukim, the Lad, they very eloquently explain, I've given the Goyim, I've let them make a mistake. They worship idols. They worship the sun. They worship the moon. But you are not like that. You I have separated to worship me, not the idols. The Chet HaEgel is where the Jewish people fail to realize they are the Am HaNivchar. And they have a unique relationship with Hashem, and they don't need this nonsense to worship Avodah Zarah. Being that the Porah Aduma is a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, because we behave like Goyim, we did activity, that is activity that the Goyim do, worshipping idols, our atonement demands that we have to purchase B'Hashgacha Pratis, go through the humiliation of coming on to a Goy to achieve atonement. Hashem is not meichel on anything. You want to behave like a Goy? This is who you like? You like this guy? Okay, you know what? You could be like, you want it, I'll give it to you. When you're going to get atonement, you're going to have to go into Goyish territory, get a visa to visit a non-Jewish country, and there are no Chabad houses there. Okay, you're not going to have kosher food, you're not going to have, and you're going to have to go through the humiliation of explaining to the Goyim why, Bedavka, you need this particular para, more than any other para, and you're going to have to purchase it with an enormous amount of money. And if the guy says, you know, kibur avoim, and that's a real nasty, nasty insult to us, you know, before I give you your para, let me just say to you, you know, we here, we cherish, we honor our parents. Did we honor our parents by worshipping the egel? Avraham was the one who taught the world that Avodah Zarah is garbage. Were we mechabed? Avram Avinu, Avram HaIvri, he was on the other side of the world. He was the one that recognized that there's a Baal Habira, there's a creator. They say to us, we cherish our parents, unlike you who don't. That's a real nasty comment, below the belt. But that's exactly what happens here. Klal Yisrael needs atonement for the ego. What is the ego? We want to be like the Goyim. We want to worship idols. We want to ignore our heritage. Avram Avinu, who taught the world that Avodah Zarah is nonsense. He took Terach. Terach was an other Avodah Zarah. And Avram Avinu, he rejected Terach. Terach was the biggest distributor and manufacturer of idols in the world. He had the factory where they made the idols. And Avram Avinu, he took a hammer and he destroyed the whole factory. This whole thing is nonsense. Did we cherish our heritage? We were mechabed our father, Avraham Avinu? No. You want to be like the Goyim? Very good. Be like the Goyim. Go to the Goyim. Go into their territory. Be like them. You know, they say, someone was once talking about the internet. This really shook me up. Rashidi once said, I couldn't believe he said it. He says, what's the Nisayan? You go online, you're tired. You're doing some work on the computer, and then you know you want to relax, so you see a Zoyna. So you click here, you click there to be ma'ayin into the nuances of the Zoyna. You know what's going to happen to you? He says, you know what's happened to you? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way Hashem punishes a person is he gives them what he wants. He says, in the Olam HaEmes, so Yechaverim, there, they're going to be going to a shir, They're going to be going to be Nene from the Ziv HaShchina. But you, because you, when no one was watching, wanted to be Nene from that Fashtunken Zayna, Hashem said, you're not going to the Shir to be Nene from the Ziv HaShchina. You have to now go and sit together, be with the Zayna. This is what you wanted. You like the Zayna? You watched her? You went to go and look at all the nuances, what she's all about? So good, in the Olam Omes, be with her. So Chazal, Nilafifai, all of the Averis a person does, they come to envelop him. You're with your Averis in the next world. So unfortunately, it's not just in the next world, it's in this world as well. Because in this world, we wanted to be like the God, we wanted to worship Avodah. Oh, you want to be like the God, you want to worship Avodah? Okay, so the atonement for worship of Avodah Zarah, because the Chet Egel is the spitz of the... You're going to have to go get your para from the Goyim. You got to go to Dama Ben Nesin in Ashkelon. Ashkelon was like Las Vegas. It was the place of the biggest, Chazal talk about that, the biggest, the lowlives of the lowlives. Maisa with a guy in Ashkelon. It was the lowest of the low of the low. It's a bizyonis, bizay bizyonis for Kohanim, Chashuvim, Talmidei Chacham to have to even buy a ticket to go to Las Vegas, the place of the lowest of them, to be there. And there were no Chabad houses there. Okay, you know, the Rebbe, by the way, the Rebbe, he didn't allow. He did not allow, and in his lifetime he allowed it. Did he allow in his lifetime a shliach in Las Vegas? Maybe the end of his... Now there is. Now they have the whole country. They have in every single state. They have a Chabad house. But the Rebbe, he was very... I can't send anyone there. There, the tumah is so great. What goes on there is so great. I'm afraid for my shluchim will be swallowed away. So there's no shluchim in Las Vegas. Now they already are. But can you imagine the bezyonis of the Chashuvim to go to Ashkelon? No, why? Who's lived there? It was a guy. Mice was a guy living in the worst part of the world. This is the Spitz Tumma, the Spitz of Tumma. This is where we had to go to buy a paradum. We can't produce it. Can you imagine with all our ingenuity? We can solve all the problems of this world. Israel is the brain power of the whole world. Every chokhmah that ever existed comes from Israel. But the Parah Adumah we can't invent. We have to go b'hashlocha pratis to the lowest of the low. Can you imagine the bezyonos? It's a midah k'neged midah. You want to worship idols? Okay, so let me take you to where they worship idols. And then on top of that all, you're going to pay through your nose. You're going to pay every last penny you have to buy this. And then on top of that all, they're going to say to you, we know how to be mechabed our parents. Not like you Jews who have abandoned your forefather, Abraham, Avraham Avinu. Okay? To add insult to injury. And then when everything is said and done, you know what happened? We didn't even buy it from them. We did buy it from them. That was going through the whole process. We did buy it from them, but that's where we got it from. So that's all part of Hashem giving us Musar. The Parah Adumah, we like to look at, oh, it's such a beautiful thing. Parah Adumah, Tahara, Taharon Shel Yisrael. The Parah Adumah is a very humiliating experience. It's a reminder of the Chet HaEgel. It's a reminder that we, once upon a time, after everything Hashem did for us, we wanted to throw it all away and go be like the Goyim. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a mitzvah of Parah Adumah, it's a kapara. It's a kapara which humiliates us. And the Hashkacha process of how we had to acquire it is very humiliating. And that's an element that unfortunately we forget to look at when we study the parasha of Parah Adumah. But it's blatant. It's out in the open. Have a wonderful day.